From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Last week, Florida was among five Gulf Coast states and the federal government in coming to an $18.7 billion settlement agreement for claims against BP related to the 2010 oil spill disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. Florida's share of the settlement comes to $3.25 billion. We take a closer look at how the settlement funding could be allocated by state and local officials to resolve economic claims and for environmental restoration work. Plus, the Florida Supreme Court ruled that lawmakers violated anti-gerrymandering rules when they redrew the state's congressional district boundaries. We'll explore what the ruling could mean for lawmakers, voters, and the 2016 election. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Last week, the Florida Supreme Court invalidated eight of the state's 27 congressional district maps drawn by lawmakers. In the historic 5-2 ruling, justices said the maps violate the anti-gerrymandering amendments voters added to the state constitution in 2010. Although the ruling only applies to eight of those districts, redrawing those boundaries will likely impact the makeup of other districts around the state as well. The ruling could send Florida lawmakers back into a special session. Later this hour, we'll explore what the justices' decision could mean for lawmakers, voters, and the 2016 election. But first, on July 2nd, the federal government and the Gulf Coast states Florida, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas announced an $18.7 billion settlement for claims against BP related to the 2010 Gulf of Mexico oil spill. It could become the largest environmental settlement and the largest civil settlement with any single entity in U.S. history. Florida's share of the settlement totals $3.25 billion. Florida's $2 billion allocation for economic loss claims is more than any other state received. And then there's an additional $1.25 billion going towards addressing environmental damage. County governments in Southwest Florida and all along the Gulf Coast are considering how best to utilize their share of settlement money. The Deepwater Horizon oil rig explosion and subsequent oil spill took the lives of 11 people and resulted in some 200 million gallons of crude oil spewing into the Gulf of Mexico. Although no oil reached Southwest Florida beaches, the local tourism industry took a significant hit at a time when the economic recession was already in full swing. Today we're getting reaction to the settlement agreement and looking ahead to how state and local governments could wind up allocating those dollars. Joining me now is Derek Brockbank. He's executive director of the American Shore and Beach Preservation Association. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Bethany Kraft is director of the Ocean Conservancy's Gulf Restoration Program and previously worked with the Restore Council. Thanks for joining us, Bethany.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Draper is executive director of Audubon Florida. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, John. It's good to talk to you again.
And we're joined by Florida policy specialist with the National Wildlife Federation's Gulf Restoration Campaign, Jessica Kelch. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
And I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. What are your thoughts on this historic settlement, and what concerns do you have about how the settlement money could be spent? Connect with our guests with your phone calls to 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post your comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Derek Brockbank, I'll start with you. First of all, I just wanted to get general reaction to last week's settlement announcement. Were you surprised to see this decision come down now? And I'm thinking especially in consideration of, you know, if you look at the history of oil disaster litigation, say, you know, the Exxon Valdez spill, that was in 1989. That legal battle went on for some 20 years. I mean, are you happy to see this happening much quicker?
Certainly pleased to see it happening much quicker. Not totally surprised. The court case had finished up this past winter, and so we were expecting a judge's ruling coming out some point this summer, so I wasn't surprised to see that the BP and the parties were at the settlement table, but very pleased to see a settlement come out so restoration can actually begin its role now.
All right. And Eric Draper, in Audubon, Florida's initial response to the settlement announcement, you encouraged Governor Scott to make sure the money is allocated in a way consistent with the golf ecosystem plan. Generally speaking, what does that mean for Audubon?
Well, we have to look at the golf as one ecosystem that stretches from Texas to Florida. Of course, here in Florida, we're responsible for the Florida part of it. Florida does have a very large Gulf coast, and it should be treated as a single ecosystem rather than 23 counties that are differently affected. And by having the governor propose and having the people work together, put together a single ecosystem plan, we can figure out where the priorities are and how to make sure that these funds are targeted best to the parts of the Gulf that need the help the most. And also match the funds with other government programs that are spending money to clean up water and to restore freshwater flows into estuaries.
And I also wanted to ask, just regarding the largest share of money Florida's getting is related to economic damage claims, even though the vast majority of our shoreline wasn't directly impacted by the spill. Does that kind of serve as a testament, do you think, to the link between the tourism industry and the importance of environmental advocacy and preservation?
Well, we certainly saw as a result of the spill a decrease in tourists coming to Florida, and that affected the entire Gulf Coast, not just the Panhandle. People didn't make a distinction about where the oil was, and a lot of people stopped coming to Florida. But people do come to Florida because we do have beautiful beaches. That's not all. Beautiful rivers and streams and springs. And I think there's a good argument to be made that we need to invest these resources and not just helping with the natural resources damages that took place and not just the economic losses that took place, but make sure that we're investing in keeping our water clean, keeping our estuaries productive with lots of fish, and making sure that Florida continues to be a place that people can come to.
All right. And Bethany Kraft with the Ocean Conservancy, I was hoping you could give us maybe a little bit more of a detailed breakdown of how the settlement funding is being divided up. It seems like it can be a somewhat complicated breakdown.
Yes, it gets complicated pretty quickly when you start looking at the details of the settlement and all of the different processes that will be funded with some of these funding allocations. But in general, there were kind of three components to the settlement agreement. The first was the natural resource damage payment, which totals $8.1 billion. And about $1 billion of that has already been allocated and paid out by BP for some projects over the past few years. But that money will be spent on projects that are directly related to impacts from the BP oil disaster. So that should be ecosystem restoration projects and projects that restore our lost use and enjoyment of those natural resources. The second part of the settlement settled the government's Clean Water Act civil claims against BP, and that was approximately $5.5 billion. Some of that money will go to the Oil Spill Liability Trust Fund, and the rest of it will actually be directed to a Gulf Restoration Trust Fund that was set up when the Restore Act was passed in 2012. And that brings money directly to the Gulf states for restoration. From there, it gets divided up into different pots and buckets of money, but two things to note there. About $1.3 billion will be set aside for comprehensive Gulf-wide ecosystem restoration projects from Texas to Florida and from the coast to the offshore environment. There will also be some allocations that will go to states for a number of uses, environmental and some economic projects, depending on what you're talking about. Florida's allocation in that respect is about $572 million. And then finally, there was the settlement of the economic claims. And as you referred to earlier, about $2 billion of, I think, about $4.9 billion total will be going to Florida to settle economic damage claims.
All right. And Jessica Kelsch with the National Wildlife Federation, I know you've got more data directly related to counties here in Southwest Florida that were impacted and that are receiving settlement money. And just recently in the last few days in the news, something we've been hearing a lot about, Sarasota County was receiving a $14.2 million allocation. Lee County was just announced this morning, accepted a $5.24 million allocation. Collier County and Charlotte counties as well have accepted settlements. And just to clarify, this money that we're talking about is strictly related to economic losses?
Right, exactly. That's part of the economic claims that were settled with individual counties. But then in addition to those economic settlements, each of the 23 Florida Gulf Coast counties will be receiving a portion of the Clean Water Act fines and penalties as well.
Okay. So, again, the dollar amounts that I had just given out for those individual counties, that's for economic claims. It doesn't seem like there's as many restrictions on how counties use that money as opposed to some of the settlement money that's going to be coming, with other intents in mind.
Right. For the Clean Water Act fines and penalties, there are 10 specific eligible activities that were defined by the Restore Act, and those do cover a broad range of categories ranging from restoration of natural resources and our coastal environment to increasing our community resiliency, to doing more economic-oriented projects, infrastructure projects, promoting tourism and seafood in Florida. But there are clear categories, and it's not just let the counties do whatever they want to do with those funds. They do have to stick to the eligible activities. They do have to put together a plan with public input on what they're going to do with those funds, and then they do need to submit that plan and have it approved by the U.S. Treasury Department.
Okay. And just changing gears just a little bit, the Lee County School Board here announced Tuesday accepting a $2.5 million settlement. Now, for school districts in particular, could settlement funding be a bit tricky? Because as you had mentioned to me on the phone earlier, they can't just use that money for general education purposes.
Well, if that was an economic claim that the
could.
School board received, then they absolutely could use it. But as far as the eligible activities associated with the Clean Water Act fines governed by the Restore Act, no, they can't use that for general education. But the economic settlement, which is what we've just been hearing about recently in
yes.
the news, that I'm assuming they could use. I'm not as familiar with the economic claim process and any restrictions on their funding.
So when it comes to the Clean Water Act settlement funding that might find its way trickling down to a school board, how could they use that?
They would need to somehow or another tie it into one of the eligible activities. So if they could frame a project that would be doing some sort of job creation or workforce development, or if they could be using it to, maybe bring students out to the shoreline and to our estuaries and use students to do some sort of hands-on restoration of the marine environment, then that would be a way that they could access it too. But again, it needs to tie back into one of these eligible activities.
We're taking a closer look at last week's historic settlement agreement in the 2010 BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico with Jessica Kelsch with the National Wildlife Federation, Bethany Kraft with the Ocean Conservancy, Derek Brockbank with the American Shore and Beach Preservation Association, and Eric Draper with Audubon Florida. And, let's go back to those non-economic claims related to the settlement funding. I understand, Bethany, that your work with the Restore Council kind of gives you a little bit better insight into what sort of projects the Restore Council might be looking to give a thumbs up on.
Yes, last year I actually went on loan to the Restore Council, and that entity was created in 2012, and it's actually a new federal agency that first consists of six federal agencies and the five Gulf states. And their task is to try to conduct restoration across the Gulf of Mexico in a way that's comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
They originally had some money. The council is funded by the Gulf Restoration Trust Fund, and which is money that is derived from the Clean Water Act fines. And so there was actually about $800 million that moved through the trust fund a couple of years ago when Transocean settled their claims related to the oil disaster. But if this settlement agreement with BP is finalized, the Restore Council will have approximately $1.3 billion of those Clean Water Act penalties to conduct their work. In the fall of this year, the members actually submitted their first round of project proposals for restoration in the Gulf of Mexico. They submitted 50 proposals, and those projects were all ecosystem and environmental restoration focused and ranged from property acquisition, land conservation, watershed management, planning and projects, building living shorelines, nourishing beaches, conducting beneficial use of dredge materials. So really a whole wide gamut of projects, all the way from Texas to Florida. Each member was able to submit 5 proposals. The council is currently considering which of those proposals they will put forward on what's known as the funded priorities list that we're expecting to see later this summer. Of course, while all this work was going on, we did not know that BP was going to settle. And so this first round of projects and this first project list is probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $150 to $180 million. We would expect that now that there's some additional certainty about what funding will ultimately be available, once this first list comes out and those projects get underway, the council will turn its attention to updating a comprehensive plan that they use to guide their restoration planning and project decision-making. And then they will begin work on their second list, which will likely be much larger in scope and have much larger projects than we saw the first time around. And again, these are projects that are put forward by the 11 members of that council. And then they are kind of put forward together as one large regional ecosystem restoration project list.
All right. And Jessica, I understand that that's really what the National Wildlife Federation is hoping that, leaders deciding how to allocate this money will focus on is those larger scale projects, correct? Have we lost you?
Sorry about that.
You
mentioned about how there are some funds already coming to the counties from the economic settlement. We mentioned there are some coming through the Clean Water Act settlement. There are going to be other funds available to the counties through other sources, and we're really hoping that they'll kind of add all of these bits and pieces together to come up with a grand total, and then looking at doing some large-scale projects with that funding. And it ties back to what Eric Draper was saying as well, that, you know, we really need for Florida a comprehensive plan. We'd love to see the governor and the state agencies come out with a broad, comprehensive plan that applies to the whole state, and then the individual counties could potentially take their share of the pie and then plug it into make this broader, overarching, comprehensive restoration possible.
All right. And Eric Draper, can you maybe tell us a little bit more about if there's any kind of specific types of projects, large or small, that the Audubon Florida would like to see funded through this?
Well, one project that I think that the people in your listening area would probably care about that is not necessarily popular with folks where I am, which is up in the Panhandle, would be the Coosatchee River.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the National Wildlife Federation, Jessica's organization, has done some great leadership work on this before, but the Coosatchee River is probably the largest source of environmental degradation in Florida's entire Gulf Coast. And if you were to make an assessment throughout the state of Florida, okay, where could we get the most done with the right amount of money? That's a place that really needs improvement. And sadly, in this legislative session, this is part of the topic because they're talking about how to use these funds to replace other lost government funds. In this legislative session, the legislature failed to fund restoration of the Coosahatchee River. And now tomorrow the South Florida Water Management District is going to meet, and even they are going to fail to fund the Coosahatchee River. So folks that are very concerned about restoring the seagrasses in the estuary are really anxious to figure out where we can get some money. And that's a project that's shovel-ready. It's ready to go if we can just get the money directed at that place. I'm not saying that's the only thing in the state of Florida we should put money into, but it certainly should be somewhere on the list.
Sure. I know Representative Matt Caldwell here in Southwest Florida had made waters a big priority for him in this past session this year. Unfortunately, that didn't go through. I think that was one of those items that we lost whenever the session ended early over a stalemate on the budget. But, you know, lawmakers are going to be heading back for the, to start committee meetings for the 2016 session in September already. Eric, have you heard anything as far as from lawmakers and their intentions going into 2016 that maybe something regarding the Coosahatchee River and that kind of large-scale work would get funded?
Well, you know, you would hope the legislature would put that very high on the list. Certainly, Lee County has a very strong legislative delegation with Caldwell and with Elizabeth Benequisto. But last year, they got very stingy with money for South Florida and for the Everglades, and there are demands for spending on environmental projects in other parts of the state of Florida. So I would say that we're going to have to work very hard to do that. And that's one of the reasons why, we at Audubon and I think other conservation organizations say, well, we should spend some of the environmental resources in the panhandle. We should look at the rest of Peninsula Florida, and we should particularly look at the Coosahatchee River, because that's where we could get the biggest environmental lift for the investment of funds probably anywhere along the Gulf Coast. And by the way, let me just add to that,
yes.
It probably can't be done alone just with restore funds, but it's certainly with restore funds, we could probably line those up with some state and local funds to really get the job done.
And is there a concern there? And I guess this is more for Bethany and Jessica here, that with the money sort of coming out, from what I understand, it's going to be over the course of a couple decades now, that maybe leaders, as you had said before, won't necessarily see it all as being able to fund one project from money coming down over time, but instead just funding individual smaller programs. And Bethany?
Yeah, this is Bethany. Yeah. I mean, I think that
definitely. Oh,
you know,
I'm sorry. Bethany, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, you know, I think, you know, kind of what we've been alluding to is the fact that all this is happening in a kind of piecemeal process over time. Mm-hmm. And some of that is a function of, you know, what's been happening with settlement and you spend what you've got when you have it. But I think for a lot of folks who really, you know, pay attention to this issue and look at these ecosystem issues that are unfolding over a long time period, over a very big area. The Gulf of Mexico is very large, and even Florida's Gulf Coast is incredibly large. It becomes critically important for us to think about how these projects and this money can be leveraged over time to make their cumulative impact greater than the sum of their individual parts.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a lot of coordination and a lot of forethought to figure out how you can accomplish something very large with lots of different pieces, different funding from, you know, local sources, from oil spill, from, you know, from us making an investment in our environment because we understand that it's linked to the health of our economy and our communities. And that's why I think, you know, you hear us talking about the need for a comprehensive plan or this overarching plan, because that provides kind of a blueprint or a roadmap for how you get to something bigger in 10 or 15 years and do it in a way that's thoughtful about sequencing and recognizes all of the barriers that we know we face regarding funding and permitting and all of the other things that go into accomplishing a project. And you know, at the end of the day, I think what we don't want to see is just a lot of random acts of restoration, I've heard it called, where you've got some nice projects, but in 20 years you don't really have anything to show for it. And working on the front end to think through how all of this fits together is very, very important.
And Bethany, you had brought up something earlier that I have overlooked, and that was that all of this isn't necessarily said and done. A judge still has to approve this, correct?
That's right. The what we saw on July 2nd was what's known as a settlement, an agreement in principle, and the consent decree, the settlement agreement itself, actually has to be finalized. We understand that that's somewhere in the time frame of the next 90 days. We should expect to see a much larger document that lays out all of the terms and details of the settlement agreement, and there will likely be a public comment period associated with that, and then the agreement would be finalized. And so there's still, a little bit of uncertainty as to what this settlement will look like in its final stage.
All right. And Derek Brockbank,
I'd like to just touch on that, too, about the opportunity for public comment, that this settlement agreement is only one opportunity for the public to comment. And if I could get one takeaway to your listeners, I would definitely encourage them to reach out to their local decision makers, their county commissioners and their state legislators, and share with them their priorities. You know, Eric talked about the Caloosahatchee River, and absolutely the estuaries of Southwest Florida are one of the major ecological drivers for the fisheries in the entire Gulf of Mexico, and it's critically important that we get this right. So definitely encourage your listeners to reach out to their county commissioners, to their state legislators, and let them know how important the Caloosahatchee, as well as other issues that might be near and dear to their hearts. I mean, the public absolutely has an opportunity to voice their opinion. A lot of these processes are required to consider public input, but we've got to get the public to give their input in order for it to be considered.
All right. And Derek Brockbank, I was hoping you could tell us a bit about just how this historic settlement could impact the work and really the mission of the American Shore and Beach Preservation Association.
Sure. And I think the biggest thing here to remember is a lot of this funding is coming because the federal government, the American people, realize that this is a terrible tragedy and we should take advantage of this tragedy to restore the Gulf Coast. The $5.5 billion from the Clean Water Act penalties that is going towards Gulf restoration took an act of Congress. It took 60 members of the Senate and 218 members of the Congress. And Congress and the rest of the country is looking at how the Gulf Coast spends this funding. So while there is critical restoration that needs to happen across the country, not just in the Gulf Coast, on the east coast of Florida, on the west coast of the United States, up and down the east coast, similar things are happening in the northeast in response to Sandy. Everyone in the next 10 to 15 years is going to be looking to see how the Gulf Coast spends this money. And it's critical that the Gulf Coast spends this money on important large-scale restoration projects of the type that Bethany was talking about, that we don't come away from this in 20 years with little piecemeal projects that don't add up to a bigger picture. Because long-term, one of the things that American Shore and Beach Preservation Association is working for is a sustainable, dedicated fund for coastal restoration across the country. There is no long-term federal funds that go specifically to coastal restoration. That is one of our missions. And it's critical that the Gulf gets funds the projects needed in the Gulf and makes significant improvement to demonstrate that this can be done. So not only is this important for the coast, for the Gulf Coast, this is important for coasts across the country to show that we can improve the health of our coastlines.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the program, but thanks so much to my guests. Derek Brockbank is Executive Director of the American Shore and Beach Preservation Association. Eric Draper is Executive Director of Audubon Florida. Jessica Kelsch is a Florida Policy Specialist with the National Wildlife Federation's Gulf Restoration Campaign, and Bethany Kraft directs the Ocean Conservancy's Gulf Restoration Program. We're taking a short break, but when we return, we take a closer look at another historic decision that came down last week. The Florida Supreme Court has ruled that 8 of Florida's 23 congressional district maps violate the state's anti-gerrymandering rules. We'll explore the impact of the decision going forward. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.